Hey people, this is the Conspiracy Oz podcast. I'm your host, Mick Raven. It is Sunday, the 10th of March, 2024. This is a review covering alternative news and events. You can call +61 02 800 6198 anytime. Drop me an email at conspiracyoz@protonmail.com. Go to the website conspiracyoz.com. Download the podcast from iTunes, Spotify, or podomatic.com and get the D program. I'm starting to notice, just at, like in the shop, people coming in and wanting to pay cash, which is sort of unheard of. It's been going, you know, as I've been there for a little while, not that long, I've noticed that everyone was coming in with the card. That was the most common thing, account or card or cash, but card was the number one. That was the one that everyone, that was flash the card. It was just, you know, it's a very simple thing. You got an FPOS machine, you just tell them to flash it on the symbol and they do it. And the thing is that I got used to that. Like we hardly did cash and the phone was, you know, the phone with the card on it wasn't as popular, but over the last few years, people, the phone is number one, the card is number two and cash is virtually vanished. But ever since we had the big Optus and ANZ outages, I've noticed people actually not coming back to use the card, but coming back for cash. And I've been so surprised. I thought, wow. And I asked these people, I say, well, why are you using cash instead of the card? And they go, oh, we're sick of the outages. We're sick of the problems with the phone. In other words, when they had the card, you know, you would have problems with cards, but with phones, it's totally different. You're relying on whether the battery's charged. You're relying on whether you got reception. And then you've got to rely on whether you're going to get cut off by some sort of outage from either the phone company or the electricity company. There's a lot of anomalies now, and these everything's on the phone. I mean, if you don't have your phone, you can't even eat, let alone tell anyone about it. So I did notice, and I've got the widgets up, but I haven't reported on it much. I sort of just left it. And we had recently, we had a couple of ministers of parliaments running around Parliament House. This is the MP Bob Catter running around Parliament House with dressed up as pigs. In big pig suits. And I thought, what's going on here? And it was all over the news, only briefly, and then it was gone. And they were putting their snouts inside of bags of cash. So obviously they were trying to show that cash is still needed and that you can't just sweep it aside. Now, he's a country MP. So out in the country, it's a big deal to have access to cash and to get access to your funds in general because banks are far and few between. And the ones that are there are all drying up. We had, I think it was Bank West, one of the biggest retailers, I think I'll go and grab that story, has just closed all of its branches and didn't even bother telling the customers. So in this ABC story, the headline says it all actually, Bank West branch closes without consultation, ultimate betrayal of the Western Australian regional customers. It is absolutely true. They didn't even bother telling them. They are, bugger them. These are people that rely on face-to-face as well, not just because they're in the country areas, right? They're used to doing it that way. They're not used to just being completely isolated and having no one to actually converse with about whatever the problem is with to do with the bank and whether they're just doing banking in general. So it says March 7, 2024, abc.net.au. It says, Bank West customers across regional Western Australia say they were blindsided and disappointed by the bank's decision to close a string of local branches. The bank confirmed on Wednesday it would be closing all 60 of its branches in Western Australia as part of a move to digital-only services. Now remember, when your electricity's unplugged, your phone's not working, that's it. You got no one to complain to, no one to talk to. There's no branch to go to. I mean, the internet service provider that I use, just personally for business and for at home, I know where they are. I can drive to them, people, to their head office. That's why I picked them, okay? You go and pick these overseas, whatever's linked to overseas companies, and you've only got a phone call to India or China or the Philippines, good luck. But that's why I do what I do. Anyway, so it's your own personal decision, but I tell you what, when it doesn't work, you have absolutely no one to turn to. And you think about that. If all your accounts are on your phone and your phone isn't accessible, how are you going to convince people you've actually got money? Anyway, so it says the bank has conceded it did not consult regional communities before it announced the branch closures. This is a new world order, full swing people. They don't care. They'll just do it. It says, While the company was keen to highlight the takeovers of 15 of its regional branches by parent company, wait for it, the Commonwealth Bank, 17 branches in other regional towns will be permanently closed. It says once the transition is complete, branches in Bunbury, Busselton, Manjimup, I think that's what it's called, Margaret River, Albany, Katanning, Esperance, Kalgoorlie, Boulder, Meriden, Mora, looks like Narrogin, Northam, Geraldton, Broome people. we got to go on a holiday to Broome soon, and it's like, okay, we'll get there. It'll be like a dust storm, nothing there. I'm kidding. It's Karratha, Canara, and Port Hedland will be shuttered. So they're gone. And then it says, moving on, Bank West spokesman Scott Spittles said it had not spoken to leaders in those communities about the closures. Not specifically on this decision, he said. A really big decision, they don't bother telling them, people. We certainly have loudly heard the importance of branches in regional communities. They just go and close them all. We're going to transfer 15 of those branches to the Commonwealth Bank. So they sold out to one of the big four people. This is a regional bank, and I'll read on. And it says, Bank West said regional branches were only closed where there was an existing Commonwealth Bank branch in town. So in other words, they have jumped the gun and handed over to one bank. Okay, that's what's happened. Mr. Spittles said vulnerable customers, particularly the elderly and people from non-English speaking backgrounds, would be provided with tailored support to transition to the Commonwealth Bank to access other available services. The move marks the end of an era for a company founded as the Agricultural Bank of Western Australia. It says adopting the Bank West moniker in 1994, the bank was bought by Combank in 2008. So there you go, for more than $2 billion. So the globalists, with their big four banks and then owned by the big four over in the US and around the world, have done this on purpose. You understand, people? It says country residents have questioned the bank's commitment to regional services in recent years, most recently a bizarre episode in January where a Latham resident had to make a 130-kilometre round trip to Dalwarrina after his local branch refused a $300 withdrawal. And it's got other branches have reduced opening days and hours with the bank citing reduced customer traffic. This is the ultimate betrayal, one Esperance-based listener told the ABC Western Australian Regional Drive. Bridgetown, 260 kilometres south of Perth, will see its branch taken over by the Commonwealth Bank as part of the transition. Don't forget, Commonwealth Bank own Bank West. So it's inevitable they were going to do this. It's called downsizing. So they can get rid of staff and all that sort of thing. It says further south in Albany, where the bank's York Street branch will close, locals were equally disappointed. It says, I think this has been on the cards for quite a while, with the digital setup coming into the banks now, resident Peter Mullally said. It's a sad day for my mother and father, banked here for many, many years, so it's a family tradition. So it says, and I love this site, they got a picture of a sign on the side of the road, and one of the bus shelters got something graffiti on it that says, no cash, no hope. I might call the podcast that. So it's got, in Kununurra, it says 3,000 kilometres north of Perth in the state's East Kimberley, residents have tracked the decline in local banking services for years. It's got local Bank West and NAB branches have closed, while Coles has paused cash out services. See what's happening with everything, people. It's all being acquisitions falling into the globalists so they can fully force you into a digital prison with no way out. Okay, that's what this is happening for. You think, oh, why did Bank West do that? Well, it was bought out by the Commonwealth Bank. So now we need to look at who's running the Commonwealth Bank. Well, let's have a look. So I'm on marketscreener.com and I've looked up the Commonwealth Bank, and I also put the word company in the search because then it goes straight to who the major shareholders are. You can, instead of wallowing through all the other information, just go straight for it. Be aware, but this site now has a pop-up. So after a while, when you search quite a lot on it, it'll do a pop-up you can't get past. So if you clear your cache out, like I do, your internet cache every day, it won't remember who you are, and it will let you search for the amount of time again the same, but not long. So you can't stay in it too long. Anyway, the top major shareholder with 92 million shares is the Vanguard Group, an American company with major shareholders, and you can bet your bottom dollar it's the Warren Buffetts and the Bill Gates, and all of them are sitting inside with their portfolios with the Vanguard Group at the top of the Commonwealth Bank. So now you can understand why they go and close. all these regional branches because they've got different agenda. It's called closing everyone, put everyone on the street on a universal basic income. That's really what they want to do. They want to destroy all business, turn all the middle class into the lower class, all the same melting pot, control them through the through a medical tyranny. They might introduce another pathogen again. I don't know. But the fact is, once they put you in a situation where you can't access cash and you're completely beholden to this particular system that's coming in, you actually have no one to complain to people. And people won't help you because they'll be more worried about themselves. That's why we've become narcissistic. We have not many ethics and morals left in the community. We're all going in different directions. That's why we're fragmented. They don't want us to be united in any sense of the word. Okay, so that answers my question about Commonwealth Bank and what's happened there. Now, if you want to know who Vanguard are, you can actually go and look at them as well and see. You can break this all down. This happens. This is how I do it, people. You go into the group that's running that group, that's running that group, that's running that group. And you eventually see it's all the same people in every other group, including BlackRock, including Warren Buffett, including all of them. They're all swap portfolios and they all have portfolios in just about all the major companies around the world. And then you can see how it works. They're not in competition, people. All right. So you go to Vanguard, you do a search, you put the Vanguard Group market screener and the word company. Say that you want to just get the company. You just want to see who the major shareholders of that particular group are. But then you notice all the headlines. Apart from that one search, you've got Vanguard Index Funds. Then you've got Vanguard International Equity. Then you've got the Vanguard Group. Then you've got the Vanguard Public Limited Company. And then you've got China Vanguard Group and Vanguard Investments, Vanguard Health. You see what I mean? Vanguard, even International Semiconductor Corporation. There are multiple versions of the same thing. But I'm going to go to the top one because we really want to see who the actual major shareholders are. Now, the pop-up's already started for me, so I can't get past it. I'm just going to try and get to the major shareholders before it comes back. But it doesn't give you much long to look at it once the pop-up starts. It just blocks the screen you can't see. And it tries to make you subscribe. I will not. And because of the pop-up, I've gone to another site. I'm just going to name the major companies that are invested in Vanguard. And then you're going to understand how this works. The Vanguard Group is different from BlackRock and the other ones as it looks after funds within funds. I know that sounds hard to understand, but I'm just going to name the companies, just the ones that you've heard of, and then you'll get the picture of who's controlling the Commonwealth Bank, which controls what's happening in Western Australia, well, the bank closures. Okay, so we've got a list, and the list is extensive, so I'm not going through it all, but I'm just going to go with some of them. As soon as you hear some of the names, A to Z, you're going to go, okay, Apple, Microsoft, Amazon, Nvidia, Alphabet, Meta, Tesla, Berkshire Hathaway, which is Warren Buffett, just JP Morgan. I'm just seeing the ones that you would know. Johnson & Johnson, Procter & Gamble. Do you understand how this works, people? And the list is huge, okay? MasterCard, obviously. Then you've got, just see if I can find one. Dovey, you've heard of that one, obviously. PepsiCo, Pepsi, Coca-Cola. So two opposing companies, shares in the same thing. Walmart, Bank of America, McDonald's. I'm not going to read any more. There are literally Netflix. Did you? They've got to say. Comcast, so there you go. Wells Fargo, it's the list. Pfizer's even in there. Funny that, but there you go. The list is humongous. I might put that up too, just for the Vanguard thing, because we do need to focus on some of these super funds because they're the ones controlling what changes our world. And for all those people in Western Australia that have now lost their banks because Commonwealth Bank bought those banks out, whose major shareholder was Vanguard, who's an American corporation that's now got all those other companies under its wing, as you just heard. Let me go and see if I can get the market screening one without the pop-up. I just want to see what they list. One sec, because they will list other fund managers. You can see how this rabbit hole just goes everywhere. Like if BlackRock's on that list, it goes all over the place. Because then you've got to look at BlackRock. Who invests in them? And on it goes, and on it goes, and on it goes. So you can see it's a huge melting pot of globalists destroying small business and taking control of the entire planet, whether it's health, whether it's mineral resources, whether it's even to do with electric cars or whatever, they are in the driving seat. Probably one that's better than market screener simply because it doesn't have pop-ups is, believe it or not, Yahoo Finance. So finance.yahoo.com, but it's got the top institutional holders. Now, this is American Vanguard, so there's another branch of them, but it's the same, it's all the same thing. Top institutional holders of Vanguard are BlackRock Incorporated, Okay, then you've got the Vanguard Group Incorporated, which invests in American Vanguard. Then you've got Morgan Stanley, and it goes on. But it's also got top mutual fund holders. And I'm just looking at that, and Vanguard's in there again on themselves. So Fidelity's there. That's another huge one. But you've got the biggest ones there. You've got Fidelity, you've got BlackRock, and Vanguard itself. So what I'm saying is that they've got their main competitors. I'm just going to look at this American Vanguard because it said competitors, and I thought, good, they're going to tell you the competitors, and that's what I want to see. So I want to see if the BlackRock sits on the competitors board. Let's have a look. I mean, before I find that, I'm just doing a normal search just on Vanguard, and I see this. Vanguard is a common owner of three major fuel retailers, Coles Group, Caltex, and Woolworths Group. So Coles and Woolies, I thought they were in competition. It says, with a BlackRock, a common owner of both Caltex and Woolworths Group. It says, in general insurance, BlackRock and Vanguard are common shareholders across Insurance Australia Group, Suncorp Group, and the QBE Group. So they're amongst everyone. Where's the competition? I mean, this is what I'm saying, people. This is where you really got to start questioning what's going on out there. It's all shrouded in, competition. There's no competition. It's more or less towards an agenda. That's it. These rich guys say, well, I want to do this, and off it goes. And they'll just do the acquisitions and sack the people and move it towards what they want. That's it. Where's the competition? That's what's so crazy about all this. How's this, people? I just stumbled on a PDF by accident, right? Because I just typed something in, and then it sometimes sends you on a different thing, but it's got, on that one, there's a headline here called The Inquiry into the Implications of Common Ownership. And this is from the aph.gov.au. So it's a government article, and it's a PDF, but I'm scrolling down into this PDF, probably about halfway, and this is what this is all about. Inquiry into the Implications of Common Ownership and Capital Concentration in Australia. Okay, so this is back in 2021. So we're just about in the middle of the pandemic. And they put up ownership. This is in commercial banking. It's got BlackRock, Commonwealth Bank, 5%. Vanguard, 5%. Westpac, BlackRock, 5%. Vanguard Group, 5%. NAB, BlackRock, 5%. Vanguard Group, 5%. And ANZ, BlackRock, 6.1%. And Vanguard, 5%. So you can see there's no competition. They're actually major shareholders. And see, what it is, BlackRock is a bunch of major shareholders investing in them. So BlackRock can invest in Vanguard. And there could be people in BlackRock like Bill Gates investing in BlackRock and Vanguard. You see how this is all messy, people. But what it does show that it has gone into some sort of small percentage major shareholder group. That's really been my point. This is why I just stumbled on this. It was an accidental thing. I wasn't even looking for this. But I realise the government knows about this. And it also mentions that it should be capped at 1%. But apparently the Australian government doesn't care. And that's why you can see that BlackRock's gone to 6.1%. So they've capped them at 5%. But what my point is that they're sitting as major shareholders through these fund managers on every bank. So where's the competition? You know, it reminds me, and I've said this on the podcast many, many times. When I was in the music industry, I worked with a whole bunch of people that have been in the industry since day one. And I remember saying to one of the big bosses there, because they were big fans of the horse racing and all that, which I'm not. And this is a music industry, so you can understand it's pretty off-center. Anyway, the big boss is there looking at the TAB guide. And I said to him, you do some betting. Oh, yeah. And what he said to me was like, well, you know, no, I never lose. And I went, what do you mean you never lose? Because, you know, gambling is terrible, people. We know that. And you do lose. You lose more than you win. He said, not if you bet on every horse. I said, bet on every horse. And so if you bet on every horse in a race, you can't lose in the essence of saying winning and losing. You know what I mean? Whether it's to do with the money, I don't know. But I thought that was odd that you could actually bet on every horse and you don't lose. Well, what do you think Vanguard and BlackRock are doing? They're betting on every horse. They can't lose. They can afford in the real world to lose actual capital, but they don't lose in the long run. Okay? So this is the way they've been doing this from day one, and we are in trouble, people. We have a bunch of brand names and labels which we thought were this or that, and they're not. I mean, for instance, on a global scale, on an Australian scale, let's say, I'm going to throw a question at you, okay? Now, you might know the answer, you might not. Now, this is a very simple question, and it really does. It's actually irrelevant to the podcast and everything else. Who do you think owns Dulux Paints? I'll just wait and let you think. You can look it up if you want, but try and have a guess and see if you're right. Okay, I gave you a bit of time to do that. Well, on the Wikipedia, in August 2019, the Dulux Group was acquired by Nippon Paint and delisted from the Australian Securities Exchange. And you're going, Nippon Paint? Who's that? Well, I'll tell you people. Nippon Paint is a Japanese paint and paint products manufacturing company. I'll just leave it at that. It's the largest paint manufacturer, the fourth largest paint manufacturer in the world. There you go. So did you know that? Did you think, oh, no, Dulux is Australian? Anyway, it's irrelevant. It's just paint. Actually, paint's got a problem because that articles I did last week, or the topic when I was talking about PFAS, PFAS isn't the paint, people. That paint on your wall has got a poison in it that's been classified as a cancer-causing agent. And this is a big deal. It's not just in the water supply. It's in just about everything surrounding you. So think about that. You know, I mean, that's on a completely different angle, but you can understand that we don't know our brand names. We don't even know who owns them. Did you know that the US once owned Vegemite? Have you noticed that the Kraft label has disappeared off Vegemite? Maybe not, but the colour looks the same and it's still called Vegemite. So for another short history lesson, the Vegemite brand was owned by Mondelez International, formerly Kraft Foods. And you've gone, what? And then it's in January 2017 when it was acquired by Australian Bega Group. And you go, yes, it's back in Australia. But it was actually owned by Mondelez International. And Mondelez International is an American multinational confectionery food company. They bought Kraft out. So then it got bought back. And you're thinking, yay, it's saved. Hang on a minute. Let's see who the Bega Group are. You see what I'm saying, people? This is what I'm talking about. You think, oh, it's back in Australian hands. No, it's actually a publicly traded company, Bega Group. And so let's see who owns the Bega Group. Now you can see what the rabbit hole goes all over the place, people. And surprise, surprise, people, guess who one of the major shareholders of the Bega Group are? Have a guess. I can hear a chorus right now. Vanguard. You got it, people. The Vanguard Group are one of the major shareholders of the Bega Group. Do you get it now, people? And I didn't even know that. I looked that up. I paused the podcast and I just started laughing. I'm not actually surprised. But at the same time, do you understand what is happening to us? We are brand name driven and we think, we surmise that it is the brand that is owned by the country that you originally thought it was owned by. Completely and utterly wrong. Do you realise that the major shareholders, global shareholders, get richer and richer? They don't get poorer and poorer. They buy more and more until it's like a communist system where you go to the supermarket, if you even do, and you want the red toothpaste or the green toothpaste, but you're not sure which one you want, but they're owned by the same company. It doesn't even matter. That's the point I'm making. It doesn't matter what you buy, it'll all be owned by the NWO. That'll be made by the NWO on the back. Of course, they won't show the ingredients. Anyway, you get my drift. It's just that we have been blindsided for probably 80, maybe so years that the acquisitions have been happening and the fund groups set up within the fund groups, within the fund groups, within the fund groups. Do you understand? And it's all publicly. As soon as it goes public, bang, you've lost it. Okay? Because these guys eventually whittle their way through. They either destroy the company or they just melt it into the big one, which is the New World Order. That is really, if you want to put a name to the New World Order, it's that. It's utter control with no competition. You know, the Rockefellers once said that competition was sin. And they believe it. And I think one of them just popped off the other day. I mean, did he really pop off? We're sort of thinking he did. I think that was Jacob Rothschild. He's gone. But it doesn't matter. They pass the baton to the next lot in the family. They keep the idea alive. Okay, that's why the finger pointing at individuals is not really a good idea, people. It's the system they put in place that's going to trample us in the future that needs to be the focus. Okay, And of course, they're going to use this digital divide to make sure that nobody helps each other. We're all individualized and we can be disappeared at a moment's notice and it will be accepted, you know. And this is that's the scary part. We've been talked into thinking this is normal. It's not normal, people. Freedom, free to think what you want and go somewhere, is really what it's about, okay? You're a wild animal roaming over the earth. You shouldn't be fenced in. That's what they've been trying to do for hundreds of years, fence everything in. You know, remember they complain about Captain Cook and Arthur Phillip coming to Australia and destroying it on Invasion Day or whatever they want to call it. And in retrospect, when you think about it, it's sort of the beginning of the New World Order, because they're conquering another land, or settling it, they said, and then they're putting in their flag. Then they're putting a boundary around the land they call is theirs, and you can't go on it. Now, if you're a wild animal, or you're even an indigenous person, and you see a boundary, it isn't a boundary. It's an obstacle, okay? And you just get around it. It's as simple as that. The New World Order is creating a digital jail, so we can't get around it, okay? So that's really what's wrong. Before you could get around it, you would create a problem, and the world is in the state it's in at the moment because of that. But that's the basis of how it started. And unfortunately, the basis of how it's going to end is complete servitude and imprisonment of everyone on the planet to do exactly as they're told. When I say imprisonment, I'm talking about zones. You can't go out of that zone. What do you call that? You can't go outside that digital fence. What do you call that? It's the same thing. These people, the globalists, they think, or maybe they know that they're the overlords of the plebs on the planet, and they will put their digital fence up all around us. This is what you're fighting against, people. It's a system. It's not just individuals. It's an idea. This is what their agenda is. Just had a break in the podcast, and I just went out to the missus, and I was telling her about everything I just said. But I just said to her as a joke, I just said, well, throw me a company name that you know, and I'll go and look it up and see who runs them. And she said Edgel, which are the frozen foods. And I went, oh, okay, I know that one. So I look it up and it's owned by Simplot, an American company. No surprises. Simplot also owns Legos, Seakiss, John West, Chico Rolls. Should I say more? Bird's Eye. On it goes. But they also created a genetically modified potato called the innate potato. Very dangerous stuff, people. And even though they say it takes out the black spots, you just heard recently a company's made a genetically modified banana. So you can see that the floodgates are open. The reason I started investigating all these things to do with alternative media was because I was alerted to the genetic modification that was coming into food decades ago. That's what got me into all this. And it looks like we've lost the war, people. It looks like Gates and his mates are going to modify food and put whatever they want in it. We are heading towards Soylent Green. We are definitely heading towards something that we cannot control, that will not be organic any longer. So if they get control of the whole digital enterprise, and we have to do everything through the phone or whatever they use, a device, an implant, whatever it is, they're going to dictate to you what you can and can't eat. They're going to do it through looking at you and say, well, you're going to cost the health industry because of your DNA X amount. They'll do this, people. They'll micromanage you and they'll say, well, you should be really eating this, 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 and this. And it'll be a list of genetically modified stuff that they create. You understand what has happened to us? We've been micromanaged from birth to death. That's what's coming. And that's to do with what's happened with the Internet of Things and how AI is coming into everything to take over all those laborious tasks. But in essence, we'll actually take over all the intelligent tasks too. So where does that leave the rest of us, people? Where does that leave billions of people? Yeah, exactly. Now you can see why they want to do the great cull. They don't need us. They've got other ways to do stuff. So that's my point. And I did look up the rest of Nippon Paints too for the Dulux thing, just to see who else was involved. And there was a company called Wertheland Holdings, okay? Which, as far as I can see, was started up by a Singaporean businessman, billionaire, called Go Cheng Lien. And it sounds to me like the two went hand in hand. Nippon Paints and Wertheland are the same. They're virtually two separate companies, but joined together with the paint company. So this is what it was, and there's no real They bought, I mean, the guy, after World War II, he bought paint from the British. So there's some sort of connection there. And then he went on to sell the paint from Singapore and then eventually go into partnership with Nippon Paint. So the scary part is that this Go guy's parents were Chinese. So you think to yourself, okay, he's Singaporean, but not really. There are a lot of Chinese in Malaysia and Indonesia, so it's not a big deal. But just sort of giving you that insight, when you look at market screener, you'll see the Singaporean flag as well as the Japanese flag together. So it really doesn't look like the globalists have gone in and grabbed the paint just yet, but they're in for some big problems anyway with the PFAS, so we'll see what happens with that around the corner. But it's a great idea to just check out names, go and look them up, get the obviously the Wikipedia, then go for the LinkedIn. You can also go for Market Screener and just general news on the companies and just see who owns what where. And you'll see the rabbit holes I dive down all the time to try and show you there is a globalist agenda with billionaires on what they want to do with the planet now. And one of the main things they want to do is to depopulate it. That's why they push abortion and they push euthanasia, because it's both ends of the spectrum. But, you know, in the end, they'll just go straight for us. So we'll see what they do. Just keep watching this space. Now, to get back to that original story about Bankwest from the ABC, because I've gone right off the rails, but it needed to be done. You sort of need to know where all these different topics go to and how they all end up back at the same path, which is the New World Order agenda path. And this is what you really got to understand. If you don't see the very big picture, it's really hard to see even the small pieces, how they fit together. You have to look at the big picture first and then put the small pieces in there. So bank closures are a small part of it, but it is really a big part because it shows you that that's where your main source of income funnels through the business, through the banks. That's how it's always been done for many years. We've all known that. It's not a big deal. But I remember working for businesses way back in the day, and you're going to go, what, when you hear this, where they've caged you in a little, wait for it, little yellow envelope, people. This is like back in the 90s, and in the little yellow envelope was your cash. That's right. Your hard-earned cash was in a little yellow envelope. A lot of people listening that know way back in the day, they'll understand exactly what I'm talking about. And other people had checkbooks. Do you remember those for business? But anyway, all long gone. Cash is still hanging in there, but only just. So to finish off that article, it says, and this is the ABC article that was entitled, if I can get the story back up, this was called Bankwest Branch Closes Without Consultation, Ultimate Betrayal of Western Australian Banks. So to read on, it says, in Kununurra, 3,000 kilometres north of Perth in the state's East Kimberley, residents have tracked the decline in local banking services for years. It says local Bankwest and NAB branches have closed, while Coles has paused cash-out services at the Kununurra store. It says Amuth bin Amar works for local advocacy group Wunan. Oh, Wunan, here we go. It's getting a bit sus already. Helping both residents secure loans and other financial support. I should look up Wunan and see. Well, it just says local advocacy group. So it's a hard word to say, advocacy. I got it, but it took a while. It's probably just a local group with that name. So I don't think it's anything more than that. I'm not going to keep digging every brand name that's thrown at me. He said that the loss of face-to-face service was particularly tough on older clients who had built trust with tellers and bank managers. Only having limited banks people will be able to visit and consult will make it more difficult, Mr. Bin Omar said. Some of the elderly people weren't used to making changes. Having that conversation around changing banks didn't agree with most of the elders. So this guy must be Indigenous, and these are the local elders. He said the Wunan would be using its resources to boost local digital literacy in response to the bank's increasing moves to digital. Increasing, well, they just closed it. It says post offices not set up as banks. While banks have pointed to services offered by Australia Post as an effective replacement for local branches, the services provided can be limited. In Kununurra, which is 285 kilometres north of Perth, newsagent Sandy Wallace said the local post office was now limiting the amount of cash customers could deposit each day. The town's last bank was closed by Westpac last year. And she says, I went to do my banking following the monstrous $200 million lotto draw. So that must have been some sort of big lotto win you could have been part of. And she said, I was told the rules had changed in Australia Post and the maximum amount you could deposit on any one day was only $3,000. It says, with a significant number of customers still opting to pay by cash, Miss Wallace said it left business owners like her in a difficult position. They've got to deposit it in dribs and drabs because of this limit brought in over the last couple of months, she said. Australia's licensed post office group, so the businesses were not set up to work as banks. It's got Executive Director Angela Cramp said the increase in businesses was welcome, but post offices were not being supported through the transition. The post office is the way that all these banks are cutting their costs to close down their branches, she told the ABC Radio Perth. So true. It says, and she says, Miss Cramp said more people were needing to access cash, including younger customers. Well, that's interesting. I've been quite surprised by the increase in cash coming in for bill paying and buying and shopping and banking in the last 6 to 12 months. I'm not. I'm seeing an increase in it too, people. It's simply because these digital services keep failing. She says it's disingenuous of the banks to say that everyone now prefers to do banking online because you cannot get money out of your home computer. Cash needs to stay and we need to access it. She's absolutely right and it should stay. This has been the argument anyway, that people need to stick to another way of not getting globalist control, because that's really what's happening here. The globalists are going to win if they cancel cash. So with that knowledge, make sure that you promote it as much as you can. Cash has to stay, people. This is the biggest deal. A lot of people don't care. You need to care, okay? And this is a story that recently came out about the ANZ outage that we recently had on the 20, I think it was in February. I'll just get the date. I put the story goes up. Sorry, I didn't put the story up, but this is the name of the story. Cash rescues retailers from protracted ANZ world line outage. So it says world line. It's 22nd of February, 2024, bankingday.com. It's got thousands of retailers and professional service providers across the country when unable to accept card payments on Wednesday after a telecommunication outage paralyzed merchant terminals operated by ANZ Worldline joint venture. It says the protracted outage began at around 8:30 in the morning and disabled retailers' terminals for up to 8 hours. ANZ Worldline was inundated with calls from terminal users and conceded on its website that its phone center was unable to meet the demand. So there you go. As soon as you become a victim, you have no one you can talk to. And they'll tell you, oh, we can't put you through because there's been too much demand. And you're thinking, this is ridiculous. I'm stuck here with no way to communicate or to buy or sell. That is, this is the most dangerous thing we're in, people. You can't go all in. Okay, you got to stay outside of it. And it says, disgruntled retailers took to social media to broadcast their grievances about losing sales because customers did not have cash on hand to pay for purchases they wanted to make. It says, we are in Busselton, Western Australia, having FPOS issues all day. One retailer told the ANZ Bank on the X platform at about 3:30 p.m. in the afternoon. Customers tried to pay and it declines and cancels and says retry. Around and around we go. Customers are not happy and we are losing sales. It said the confusion of ANZ Worldline customers was compounded throughout the day as the bank redirected customer inquiries to ANZ Worldline Payment Solutions, the joint venture merchant acquiring company in which the bank holds only minority stake. The joint venture took control of ANZ's merchant services business in April 2022 when a French company known as Worldline SA acquired majority ownership of the operations. There you go again. We're thinking, oh, ANZ owns the FPOS services called Worldline, but no, it was a French company. So you're thinking, what's going on here, people? I mean, and I'm not looking up these companies because I can already see what's going on here. There's no point. I already know what the strings are being pulled behind it. So it says, one retailer who beseeched the bank on social media to provide some information about what happened to her machine was asked to contact the joint venture company. Can ANZ please communicate an official statement as to why FPOS is currently down? The merchant customer asked the bank on its Facebook page. You've got to go to Facebook. Hilarious. It says, hard to run a business with no FPOS and unable to get any information as to what is happening. This is what happened to people for 8 hours, people. Imagine that, working for nothing all day with problems. People screaming to buy stuff and they can't get it. It says, an ANZ Bank social media officer redirected the customer to ANZ Worldline Payment Solutions website. As you know, they are currently experiencing some lengthy wait times when calling. I am awfully sorry for any inconvenience again, the bank officer told the merchant. That's it. Sorry. That's it. Sorry. You've just lost tens of thousands. Sorry. So it says, while ANZ Worldline announced on its website at 1 p.m. that some of the affected payment terminals were returning to service, many merchants continued to experience problems as they were asked to reinitialize their machines or wait another 30 minutes if their first attempt to reactivate was unsuccessful. So if you were a major shareholder, a globalist, and you had major shareholders in banks, and then you wanted banks to hurt certain businesses, I wonder, but let's not wonder. Let's read on. So it says, however, scores of ANZ Worldline customers continue to report problems with their terminals to the downdetector.com.au website. I've seen that site. Until 5 a.m. when there was a sharp fall in reported problems. At around 5:30 p.m., an ANZ Worldline spokesperson confirmed that service provision for payment terminals had returned to normal operation. So what actually happened, people? Why was there an outage? What's going on? It says, earlier today, a telecommunications issue affected some of our customers' FPOS terminals, the spokesperson said. The issue is now resolved by our service provider, and while most of the affected FPOS terminals should now be back online, we are continuing to work with any customers experiencing ongoing issues or who need help to restart the terminal. And I put in red. The protracted outage triggered chaos at retail counters and doctor's surgeries as merchants and cardholders mused over how goods and services would be paid for. You're in a doctor's surgery. How are you going to pay for it? And it says, in most cases, it seems that customers use cash to settle purchases. However, given the obstacles to accessing hard currency in many rural areas, it is difficult to fully gauge the impact of the outage. It says, in some cases confirmed to Banking Day, customers had no choice but to abandon purchases. The ANZ Worldline spokesperson confirmed that the outage affected retailers across the nation, but refused to say how many businesses were denied the ability to accept card payments. Oh, could it be directional? Like maybe that business can trade and that one can't. They didn't give a reason, people. They just said there was some sort of glitch. Banking Day understands that the outage mostly impacted small businesses. Isn't that interesting, people? On specific merchant plans. But ANZ Worldline would not discuss details of the types of customers affected. Flick of the pen, people. Tick the box. Globalist. Well done. The outage incident reignited the public controversy over whether banks should have a national service obligation for provisioning cash to customers, people. ANZ Chief Executive Shane Elliott is one of the most outspoken advocates for digital banking, and his company is the forefront of withdrawing channels that provide access to cash. The resilience of his digital-first strategy comes under extreme pressure during protracted outage events like the one that occurred on Wednesday. I'm just going to look up this Shane Elliott guy, this ANZ guy, and see what's motivating this guy to really want to go digital so hard. What could it possibly be? Now, most of the stuff I can find on him is that he came from Citigroup, which is another globalist run institution, and he's actually a Kiwi, so he's come from the ANZ, from over the Tasman, and he's here. He's worth probably about $5 million annually, which is the highest paid CEO apparently of the Big Four. But he's really a big pusher of digitization. Got the word right. And that's because of COVID. So this guy is really pushing hard to get rid of all the, well, not all the bricks and mortar, but get rid of the connection so it's all done without cash. So he's a big pusher in that. So I'm trying to figure out what he's going to try and do. So he's pushing ANZ towards a complete digital transformation. That's what he wants to do. And he said, at some extent, his job is to burn the boats a little bit and say there is no going back. We're committed to a strategic objective. So whether he's been trained to do this because he went to a university that also spawned other New Zealand CEOs in the banking industry, whether they all got their prep talk, or pep talk they call it, who knows? But this guy is hell-bent on turning that particular bank fully digital. So he will be completely objectional towards cash, keeping cash. So this is a guy that is doing what the globalists want. So whether that's because he's been told to or whatever, it is the way that bank is going to go. So you can see the Commonwealth Bank doing the same thing with Bank West, closing all the branches. You can see it's in lockstep. So it is definitely going to head towards this controlled mechanism towards you not being able to access to cash. So what's going to happen is all the people that have pulled the cash out of the bank to hoard it, to get it away from these whole controlled mechanisms, eventually will be outlawed. Seriously. That's what they're going to try and do, outlaw cash and coins and anything to do with that sort of and I'm going to look up Bob Catter and see what's happened with this sort of jump around in the Parliament House wearing the pig uniform, because I didn't really do a story on it. I just saw it and went, I wonder what's going on there. Well, actually, the pig suits that they wore in Parliament weren't about a cashless society. They were about the price gouging of Coles and Woolworths, the big duopoly in Australia with the supermarkets. They were sort of dressing up as the supermarket giants and sticking their snouts into the cash. So that wasn't about that, but the thing that happened with cash was serious as well. So it's got here, and I'll report on the pig thing too, because that's interesting too, because they want to break up the power of Coles and Woolworths and make them one company. But what they don't realise is that major shareholders are the same on both companies. So even if you turn them into one company, you're just making it obvious that it's the same major shareholders. I don't know if that's the purpose, but I don't think that's what he's going to do, but I think that would be the outcome. So even though it appears to be a duopoly, if you make them one, well, we're getting close to a new world order then, aren't we, people? Becoming very visible then, if there's only one supermarket to buy everything from, and it's cashless. So what happened to Bob Catter, the MP from North Queensland, is he went to the cafe in Canberra in Federal Parliament, and it says here, this is on February the 7th, 2024, this is very interesting, people. It's got cash remains king after Catter forces the cafe to take a $50 note. It says, and it's obviously a funny publication. It's from aap.com.au as well. It says, His Majesty may be on the Australian dollar, but cash was anything but king, as Bob Catter had his tender rejected in the Federal Parliament cafe. The Queensland firebrand was outraged his crisp $50 note wasn't accepted when he tried to order fish, rice and vegetables. Staff offered to give Mr. Catter his fish for free, but he remained hungry for justice. I like that. Speaker Milton Dick jumped in to support the lower house larrikin, urging staff to take the cash. Mr. Catter rallied against the prospect of a cashless society. Well, that's good. If you have a cashless society, the banks control your life. And he's absolutely right, people. You can't buy a loaf of bread without permission from the banks, he told Sky News on Wednesday. Cash was also crucial when the power cut out in natural disasters, he added. You don't realise until you're caught, he said. And he's absolutely right. I totally agree with what he's saying. Now, the pig thing, it says here, and this is from news.com.au, and it came out on the 29th of February, 2024. It says, dressed like a little piggy for market, Bob Catter and he had a stern message for the supermarket giants and Anthony Albanese, the Prime Minister. A bizarre protest against the supermarket giants involving a pair of inflatable pig suits has led to the crossbench warning Labor it will bleed voters if it doesn't act now on grocery prices. Bob Catter and Andrew Wilkie caused a stir as they trotted around Parliament House with their snouts in the trough of fake cash, drumming up interest in their renewed push to break up Coles and Woolworths market power. So basically, they didn't want the two companies to be one, like I thought. They just wanted to break up their power, which I don't see how you can do that, because where else are you going to buy food? It says the MP said they plan to introduce legislation, which they first tried to pass a decade ago, to reduce the powers of the big two supermarkets and create a commissioner for food retailing that would have powers to stop price gouging and other anti-competitive behaviour. It would also scrap the voluntary food and grocery code of conduct, which they said was doing nothing, and require the supermarkets to publish what they are paying farmers. And it says, but not everyone was impressed by the stunt, with some questioning why the handsomely paid pair were acting like a bunch of farm animals on a Wednesday morning. Every now and then, there are moments where Australian politics makes Pakistani politics seem boring, and I'm never mentally prepared, comedian Sami Shah said on X. I am not awake enough to see this yet, another wrote. Good to see the country is still bonkers, a woman responded. While the men were too busy eating fake cash, oinking and squealing in the morning, they later returned flanked by colleagues Monique Ryan, Rebecca Sharkey, Day Lee and Russell Broadbent after a costume change. So you can see straight away, they're sort of making fun of them, saying the issue is not important, but actually the issue is quite serious. It says a mock-up of price tag from Coles and Woolworths showing the difference between what the farmers are paid and consumers shell out for potatoes was on show. Mr. Catter also turned up with a branch he'd acquired to mimic the metaphor that diversive powers, if enacted, would be a big stick to the supermarket duopoly. Are we just going to continue with the supermarket chain screwing the farmers down through the floor and charging the consumers a squillion dollars? He said as he waved his big stick around. Coles and Woolworths have a combined nearly 80% of the market share of supermarkets in Australia. Mr. Wilkie and Catter want supermarkets limited to a maximum of 20% market share within 5 years. Politicians from all sides have been heaping the pressure on the supermarket duopoly in recent months after Coles and Woolworths returned profits that exceeded $1 billion last financial year. Coles and Woolworths have repeatedly denied engaging in price gouging. They're run by big major shareholders. What do you think is happening, people? Think of the agenda. Four separate reviews, including a competition watchdog price inquiry, into the conduct of the supermarket chains are currently underway. I wonder what's going to happen with that. The federal government appointed Labor Minister Chris Craig Emerson to lead a review of the Food and Grocery Code last month. Prime Minister Anthony Albanese has previously said he was prepared to act, but would wait until the outcome of the reviews have been handed back. You can go to the store and see how much something's selling for, and then you can find out what the farmers get paid. It's not that hard. On how the crossbench would force the government to act, now given it did not need their votes in the lower house to pass legislation, the MPs had a stern warning to Labor. The big boys did not achieve 33% primary vote, Mr. Catter said. If they do not move on this, that 33.5% that we independents got at the last election will increase. So they got a picture of them running down the hallway. It says, in their pig suits, it says, if you want to see us accelerate and get more votes, well, just sit there and you look after Coles and Woolworths. Miss Lee, who toppled Labor's flyby candidate Christina Keneally in Fowler in a shock win, said she was not afraid to head out to Western Sydney and convert more people to independent voters. See, this guy's saying, don't forget your cash. And it says, Mr. Wilkie noted it was the crossbench who successfully pushed for the Banking Royal Commission. There are ways of moving, he said. That's even when the government's got a majority. Just wait until they go into minority after the next election. He's actually right. That will happen too, people, because of the cost of houses, interest rates, the whole kit and caboodle. Labor's done nothing, but neither will Liberal people. It's an agenda. They're the Liberal Party. It's meant to go this way. The independents are the only ones that can slow it down. Maybe not stop it, but definitely slow it down. So keep using cash, people. Keep using cash. I mean, this is very relevant to what's happening in Australia to do with all this, because the average person can see something's wrong because people aren't spending anywhere. So businesses are now looking at each other and going, what's happening? So this article came out on the 27th December 2023, and it's abc.net.au, and it says Australia narrowly avoided recession this year. That was 2023. What these experts think will happen in 2024. Yeah, experts. It's got fears that Australia would enter a technical recession during 2023 didn't eventuate. And bearing in mind, people, the UK and Japan are now in recession. It says, but that's all thanks to a much higher than anticipated migration surge. Oh, yes, of course it is. As more than 500,000 people moved here during the year. So there you go. 500,000 people came in 2023. And there's going to be another 700,000 on top. It says, bumping up the total demand, even per capita consumption fell. It says, for many, life in 2023 certainly felt recession-like as Australians face more interest rate hikes, a rising tax bill, and a still increasing cost of living that again outpaced wage growth. It says, yet Australians' unemployment rate remained virtually unchanged, really, near 50-year lows, and property prices shrugged off rate rises to resume growing back to record highs, really. And official inflation numbers pulled back from the peak of 7.8% we had coming in 2023. And it says we asked four leading economists what they thought would happen in 2024. Let's see what they say, people, because recession is definitely coming. Let's see how they avoid the question. Interest rates may be cut, will be cut, but there might be another hike. The Reserve Bank lifted the cash rate five times in 2023. I think it was more than that, raising it from 3.1% to 4.3% by the end of the year. It followed a 3% point increase the bank implemented the year before and led to protests outside the RBA Sydney headquarters. So there you go. And it's got the bank paused hikes again in December, and economists are mixed on whether there will be another hike to come in the new year. And it says, I think the last interest rate hike in November has led to a bit of a perhaps change in expectations that maybe we haven't seen the peak in interest rates in Australia. That's AMP's Deputy Chief Economist Diana Messina said. Like many of her peers, this time last year, Miss Messina didn't foreshadow the five interest rate hikes the RBA put through this year. So why are they asking now, people? I'll be the first to say that we were too optimistic on the rate hike view, but by being optimistic, I mean we underestimated how far interest rates would go in Australia. Well, that's what it's called, being optimistic when it's not true. It says, however, the GDP data published at the start of December came in much lower than expected and showed the economy grew by 0.2% in the 3 months to September. Economists generally expect the central bank will begin cutting rates next year. Oh, of course. So Australians will be a bit more pleasantly surprised than negatively surprised over the course of 2024, Westpac Group Chief Economist Luke Ellis said. Westpac, one of the big four, one of the ones controlled by globalist interests. I mean, you're going to listen to that one, people? And it says, until October 2023, Miss Ellis was an assistant governor at the RBA responsible for its economic forecast before she left to take up her new role at Westpac. You gotta believe they're asking definitely the wrong people. And it says, and I don't even think I'll read the rest of it because I just see what they're going to say. But just reading this part just here, slow grind for inflation to fall. That's an RBA target, Reserve Bank of Australia. Australia's December quarter to 2022 inflation rate, published in January 2023, way back then, came in higher than expected at 7.8%. So they're looking at old data. I'm just going to see what the conclusion is. I don't want to read the whole article. It goes on and on and on. It's got unemployment will slowly start to increase. Well, that we know. That's obvious. Just reading headlines here, people. And it just says here, property prices will keep rising, but not so fast. I mean, this is all no-brain stuff. We know this is all going to happen. And it's got global factors will continue to impact Australia's economy. Really? This is no-brainer stuff. None of this. So I don't even... I'm not even going to read the rest. I'm just scrolling through it and realizing it's a pointless article. But why don't we go and have a look at cold, hard facts like bankruptcies? I'm going to go to the conspiracyoz.com site. I'm just going to look up bankruptcies. I want to see if they've bothered to tell the truth. This is ASIC about with the ABNs because they register and deregister ABM, so they know when bankruptcies are occurring. I want to know if TradingEconomics.com, who uses that data from ASIC to show you the major bankruptcies in Australia, I want to see if they're up to date. So I've gone to the widget. They're on the right-hand side of the widget bar in conspiracyoz.com, and I've gone to Australian bankruptcies. So I've clicked on it, and now I'm looking at it. And it still doesn't show the total for January. That is really dangerous. We are now in March. And they show nothing for February. And they've even listed the January one as 2024. They haven't even been bothered to put January on the actual bar. So you've got all the bars going right back from March last year. And you can see they're all around the 800, 900s. That's 800 and 900 major Australian companies going bankrupt. That's what that is. And the data they're showing for January 2024 is 119 companies, which is absolutely bogus. It is easily around the 800 or 900s, and they're not showing it, people. So something's wrong with the data. They don't want people to see. And on that note, let's go and have a look at the gold. I haven't looked at gold for a few days. I just want to see, because if gold goes through the roof, people, your recession is here, because people will buy up the gold in Australia to get out of the depression. Oh, I said depression, did I? I didn't mean to say that. Let's have a look. So we're going to the abcbullion.com.au, which is a widget on the right-hand side of the conspiracyoz.com, and we're just going to see where gold is sitting. And I told you it's going through the roof, but I haven't looked at it lately, so I'm just going to have a quick look. It's up to nearly 2,200 an ounce. That's the highest I've seen it in ages, and that is really, really scary, people. That means that it is, and I'm just going to get the right date. I want to make sure I'm doing my due diligence. Okay, from the price, from the 9th of March 2024, this is looking at the latest date they've got up on the site, $2,194 an ounce. That was the last reading. That is, I'm going to say it, the word, unprecedented. That is the highest it's been since, that's the highest it's been. It's even in the global financial crisis, it never got that high, people. So, grab hold of your chairs, people. We're in for a big ride. I don't want to tell you about this, but I'm telling you about it. And there's another headline here that I just grabbed recently. It's to do with the global banking groups. And it's got, and this article came out on around the same time as the that other article I was reading about the recession, the possible recession. This came out on December the 28th, 2023. And it's from zerohedge.com. Great site for independent journalists as well. It's got banks terminate 60,000 workers in one of the bleakest years for the industry since 2008. Now, what does that tell you, people? 2008, that was the global financial crisis. So it says the collapse of three US regional banks, the First Republic Bank, Silicon Valley Bank, and Signature Bank, marked some of the largest failures in the banking system since 2008. Central banks contained the mini crisis earlier this year with forced interventions and mega merger of Credit Suisse and the UBS. Despite the interventions, global banks still axed the most jobs since the global financial crisis. And they just closed 60 branches, didn't they, Bank Western Australia? How many people just lost their jobs in 60 branches, people? So there's a new report from the Financial Times shows 20 of the world's largest banks slashed 61,905 jobs in 2003, a move to protect profit margins in a period of high interest rates amid a slump in deal-making and equity and debt sales. This compared with the 140,000 jobs lost during the global financial crisis of 2007 and 8. So it's going that way. And just so this is exactly what the globalists want. They want to collapse business, and they do it through collapsing banks, and then they make sure cash is gone. Then where are you going to turn people? The universal basic income. That's all that's going to be left, which is a like a permanent payment system for people to sit around at home. Everyone's going to go, hey, that's like when all the LGAs were closed during COVID and we could just stay home and get $750 a week in Australia. Yes. The difference is even if you've got a job, you'll still get that money. And it's about 500 Australian a week. There are a lot of people listening and going, well, that's not too bad. I could probably survive on that. Once you fall into that trap, you are 100% controlled by globalists from that point onwards, and there is no going back ever. Never forget that part, people. Never forget that part. And to finish up on that article, it's got, there is no stability, no investment, no growth in most banks. And there are likely to be more job cuts, said Lee Thacker, owner of the financial services headhunting firm Silvermine Partners. FT noted that corporate disclosure data and its independent reporting did not include smaller regional bank cuts, indicating total job loss could be much higher. It says at least half of the job cuts come from Wall Street lenders struggling with Western central banks, most aggressive interest rate hikes in a generation. It says the most significant cut of any single bank was Switzerland's UBS. And it said Morgan Stanley reduced jobs by 4,800, the Bank of America by 4,000, Goldman Sachs by 3,200, JP Morgan Chase by 1,000. As a whole, it says Wall Street cut 30,000 jobs this year. And it says the revenues aren't there. So this is partly a response to overexpansion, but there is also a simpler explanation. Political cost-cutting, said Thacker. It's got Gaurav Arora, global head of competitor analytics at Coalition, warned, we expect full year 2024 to be a continuation of the story of 2023. So there you go. They expect that the job cuts are going to keep coming in the banking sector. So what they're saying is there's no growth. The bank, something has to give. And what happens? It's jobs. Businesses do it everywhere. Where I am are doing it. They're all doing it. What they do is to keep the bottom line the same, they offload people. So as the whole of the growth shrinks, it's in lockstep with how many people they get rid of. The problem is if it doesn't bounce back, businesses disappear and there are more people not working, which is a burden on any system. And that's what the globalists want to do. They want to make sure we don't come back from this. That's why this recession is the greatest recession, because it's not going to bounce back like 2008 and 9 did. It's going to keep going down. So watch the gold, because that's going to go up and up and up. And also watch the bankruptcies. And I'm talking about the major bankruptcies, not the smaller ones, the big ones. And you're going to see a trend. And then you'll know when it hits. And of course, you don't need them to tell you that it's hit. You'll be able to look around you and see all the Felice signs. I do it all the time. Just look for all the businesses disappearing. And the other big thing to watch for is the building trade. If they're not buying concrete, they're not building houses. If the sales in all that sort of building materials disappears, that means they're not building. That's an obvious thing. We have a housing crisis in Australia. They're not building buildings. They're just accommodating. Who's left? Why do you think the people in Lismore who lost all their homes in the flood haven't had their homes rebuilt? This is because there's no industry. The industry is starting to stagnate, okay? When that happens, watch out, because then you know that if there's no more housing being built and they're bringing more people into the country, this is going to create a bottleneck, okay? They want to fill the jobs, but where are they going to live? So they're going to start targeting people that already own their homes, and they're going to say, well, you need to lease out that spare room you're not using for these overseas immigrants that want to work. Because Australians, there's not enough Australians to do the jobs. This is what is happening. But really what's going to happen is those immigrants will replace the workers that are already here, because they're going to be easily more controllable because they're glad they're here and they're going to do anything they're told. So that's what happens every time. As soon as a population comes, they pander to them. And then when they become citizens, they vote for them. It's the same old, you know, scratch my back, blah, blah, blah. So that's another thing. So the Labor government's going to let them all in. Every time a Labor government's in, they're going to vote for them. It's so simple. I mean, that's how you buy votes, literally. And Albanese's bought, well, you could say he's bought 700,000 votes, which is a pretty big whack of people. So as long as he accommodates them, and that's the hard part, because where is the accommodation, they'll vote for him. In the meantime, it's just, I just think that the whole purpose of what they're doing needs to be exposed. People don't really get it. They don't understand really what the big picture is. That needs to be exposed. If people realise that it's a depopulation agenda, they will react, okay? It's just a lot of people don't believe it. If you don't believe it, then you're going to think all these things are just happening by coincidence. That's it. There is no coincidence. There never was. Never will be. It's always done on purpose, but it appears to be like a coincidence, okay? But it's not. It's a bit like the Americans building a port in Gaza. Like, wow, what's that for? Oh, because they want to give them aid. Really? Or is it a precursor for the port that they want to go and get the Gaza gas in the Gaza Marine off Palestine, which is worth trillions of dollars with the Israeli government? Work it out for yourself, people. There's always a bigger part of the picture, and it usually fits an agenda. Now, to finish up on the whole cash is king thing, I put up conspiracyhealth.com. Another big outage proves cash is king. This came out on February the 23rd, 2024 on change.org. So it's part of that petition I've got up at conspiracyhealth.com. And it says, hi, it's like an update. Hi, cash lovers. Thanks for signing and sharing our petition to stand up for our right to choose how we pay for essential food and groceries. It says, this week, another ANZ outage left thousands of customers and business owners stranded. It says, here is how respected banking industry newsletter concluded their report. The outage incident reignited the public controversy over whether banks should have a national service obligation for provisioning cash to customers. ANZ chief executive, or his back people, Shane Elliott, is one of the most outspoken advocates for digital banking, and his company is at the forefront of withdrawing channels that provide access to cash. The resilience of his digital-first strategy comes under extreme pressure during protracted outages events like the one that occurred on Wednesday. So that's what I read in the other one, the ABC report. It says, if banks can't build a reliable, private, free, cashless payment system, they must stop limiting our access to cash. So true. The RBA, the ACCC and the government are currently grappling with how to ensure Australians can access cash. Well, it's simple. Don't get rid of it. It says, our petition, or this is his petition, calling for mandated cash acceptance now has over 160,000 signatures and is growing every day without a big marketing budget. So it says, please share our petition and use the link below. Do it, people. If you go to conspiracyhealth.com right now and you look on the left-hand side of the widget bar, scroll down just a little bit and you'll see an Australian cash and banking guarantee. Click on that one and sign up. It's up to 164,000 since that article came out, so it's growing. And it'll only get bigger as they have more outages, because this is what the internet does. It's not reliable. But I sort of know what they're doing. If they have enough collapsing of this sort of services, then they'll say, we have the solution. Because this is the old Hegelian dialectic, problem, reaction, solution. They'll say, well, the internet's going down all the time, the apps aren't working. We're going to bring in a reliable system that's going to be the biggest and best networking answer ever. And it'll be called the real 5G. They'll probably call it that too, because the 5G they've got at the moment is not the real 5G. And people will jump at it. They will think we've been saved. it's amazing how they put their pieces together to get to that agenda, which is a surveillance state where you're micromanaged from birth to death. Now, on a completely different subject, when I mentioned before about the port they were going to set up in Gaza, the US, I thought I might just look at it because I'm curious to see what the actual formalities of it are, because to me it does seem like what this story is saying. It's just a big distraction. It's for Biden to look like he's doing the right thing for that side of the world, that he's sort of fixing the problem when really it is just a Band-Aid. It's not fixing anything at all. They need to stop the war, like stop killing people. Just stop now. I think 30,000 plus against 1,200 is sort of equal now. So we need to stop and pick up the pieces and work out what happened. But they're not stopping. And neither the Americans, they're not stopping. So Al Jazeera, it's got aljazeera.com. The US port plan to step up aid delivery to Gaza criticized as distraction, which is exactly what I thought too. It says plan criticizes an attempt to divert attention from widening, famine in Gaza as Israel obstructs aid operations. Very, very true, people. And also, don't forget, Biden's got an election in November, you see, against Trump. So that's going to be interesting in itself. So it's got 8th of March, 2024, AlJazeera.com. A United States plan to build a temporary port off Gaza's coast to step up the delivery of humanitarian aid has been criticized as an attempt to divert attention from hundreds of thousands of starving Palestinians and Israel's consistent blocking of assistance to the enclave. Now, they are trying to drop aid in through the planes, like they're dropping pallets on parachutes, but apparently are falling off the off the parachutes and killing people, but that's another story. But they're attempting to do airdrops, but it's not working because you've just got to stop the war. You've got to stop the carnage now. You don't need to put a Band-Aid on it because there's still going to be more people dying and more people starving. So it's a genocide. So until people actually realise what's really happening now that the cat's out of the bag, this is just another diversional tactic as well. And it says, US President Joe Biden said in his State of the Union speech on Thursday that he was directing the US military to lead an emergency mission to set a pier off Gaza's Mediterranean coast to receive ships carrying food, water, medicine and temporary shelters. You know what they're doing? This is a precursor for when they go and get the gas. I absolutely think it is. I don't believe that they are actually... It's a Hegelian dialectic again where they look like there's a problem. They caused it in a sense by letting the war continue and then they're going to fix it. It's just ridiculous. But really, to me, it's an ulterior motive into getting the gas off Gaza, which is worth trillions of dollars, okay? Because petrol's been demonized. Gas is number two, but it's still going. So these countries in the West need the gas. Look what happened with Russia. They don't supply the gas to Europe anymore. And they're actually thinking of building a pipeline straight through to, I think it's Cyprus, through to Cyprus, and then on to the mainland of Europe to give them gas. It's some sort of pipe dream, you could call it. But that's another hypothetical as well. And it says, and I like this part. Actually, it even says something about it. It goes, what is it? Finding the article. Planning for the operation, which is initially to be based on Cyprus. See, that is the whole connection. Does not envision the deployment of US military personnel in Gaza. Now, that's diversional. And he said, no US boots on the ground, Joe Biden. Says, while there has been growing criticism from the Biden administration of Israel severely restricting the entry of humanitarian aid, and they are, into Gaza by land, prompting the US to airdrop 36,000 meals in northern Gaza. It continue, and what you got to understand is most people went to the south. They were chased down to the south of Gaza. Anyway, that's where the famine is. It says, it continues to supply Israeli military with weapons and remains a staunch ally of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. So in one hand, the token gesture of 36,000 meals, and on the other hand, the bombs to destroy them. Work it out, people. Obviously, this is not the intention. So it's got Biden gave few logistical details, but US officials said the operation would take a number of weeks to plan and execute. By then, more thousands have died. And the required US forces are in the region or would soon begin moving there. Washington would also coordinate with the Israeli army regarding the security situation on Gaza's coast. I wonder what that's for. I mean, you see Israeli soldiers shooting people trying to get to the aid. I mean, they need to stop. This has gone out of control now. It says the head of the European Commission said on Friday that a maritime aid corridor could start operating between Cyprus and Gaza this weekend. That's exactly what they wanted to do with getting the gas. That's exactly how they wanted to do it. So wait and see, people. They said they want the gas this year. So I can only assume that that's exactly what's going to start happening. And people then realise, probably by too late by then, too many people would have died and they would say, oh, we can't bring them back from the dead. So it's got Commission President Ursula von der Leyen said a test run of food aid collected by a charity group and supported by the United Arab Emirates could leave Cyprus as early as Friday. We are launching this Cyprus maritime corridor together, the European Union, the United Arab Emirates and the United States. These are all the people that want the gas, people. It says, she said after visiting facilities in Larnaca in Cyprus. We are now very close to opening the corridor, hopefully this Saturday, Sunday. I'm very glad to see an initial pilot will be launched today. She gave no details on when the aid would be delivered in Gaza and made no reference to Biden's announcement about the temporary pier on the Gaza coast. It's all up in the air. It's not real. And in the meantime, people are dying of famine and being shot and killed and weapons supplied by the US to Israel. Work it out, people. It's not too hard to figure out that they want a genocide. They want to get rid of so many of them, they never go back. It says, Gaza port planned a distraction. It's got Mustafa Barghouti, the Secretary General of the Palestinian National Initiative, told Al Jazeera on Friday that the plan to build a port in Gaza is not a new idea. I wonder why. It says, it seems to be just another effort to divert attention from the real issue here, which is that 700,000 people are starving in North Gaza. Okay, well, it's North Gaza now. And then it goes on to say, and it's not allowing humanitarian aid to them or the rest of Gaza Strip, he said. There are large quantities of aid waiting to get into the enclave at Gaza's border with Egypt, Barghouti said, adding that the international community are doing nothing to pressure Israel to stop this blockade. Al Jazeera's senior political analyst, Marwan Bishara, said Biden's announcement is a distraction from Washington's continued support for Israel. And that's so true. She says, I think a statement like that in the State of the Union address is more theatrical and more public relations than it is in a sincere attempt at bringing an end to the suffering in Gaza, Bishara said, and she's absolutely right. Mark Owen Jones, an associate professor of Middle East Studies and Digital Humanities at Hamad bin Khalifa University in Qatar, told Al Jazeera that Biden's focus on foreign policy, specifically the war in Gaza, in his speech was also him trying to reaffirm fundamentally his support for Israel first and trying to assuage some of the criticism he's getting from members of his own party about the US response to Gaza. He added that the way Biden framed the war, by adopting the Israeli line that everything they are doing, the genocide, the mass killings, is a response to October 7, sent a clear message that the US still stood firmly with Israel despite its expressed frustration with the lack of aid getting into Gaza. And it's got no substitute for aid delivery by land. That's true, because the air didn't work. It's not going to work. Sigrid Kaag, the United Nations, Humanitarian and Reconstruction Coordinator in Gaza, well, that's not working, is it? Welcomed the US plans to provide a sea access for aid delivery into Gaza. They're all dying while they're trying to build a bloody wharf, people. At the same time, I cannot but repeat, air and sea is not a substitute for land. True. And nobody says otherwise. Kaag told reporters on Thursday after briefing the UN Security Council. See, there are people on the border. And as the trucks go in to try and give aid to the Palestinians are being attacked by Israelis, the citizens, they're trying to block it, saying, no, we want our hostages back. So you've got that happening too. As a spokesman for the UN Relief and Works Agency for Palestine, refugees said this week that the most straightforward way of getting aid into the Gaza Strip is to use the existing crossings, namely the Kerem Abu Salem, called the Kerem Shalom by Israel, and the Rafah from Egypt. Tamara Al-Rafai told Al Jazeera that the existing land crossings are faster, safer, and more economical than a maritime route and airdroppings attempts, because it's just farcical. He's obviously doing it because he's got an election coming. He wants to. They're trying to hide the fact that they're supporting Israel while they destroy people. It says, why should we reinvent the wheel? Let us use what exists and what has worked before, Al-Rafai said, stressing that there are constant requests for a ceasefire that would allow an influx of humanitarian assistance. And that's true. If you let them through the road, they can't shoot anymore. They've got to stop while the aid gets delivered. And that's why they don't want it. So it says, Melanie Ward, the CEO of Medical Aid for Palestinians, told Al Jazeera, airdrops, temporary seaports and the like are not realistic or lasting solutions to stave off looming famine and sustain life in Gaza. It's not meant to. This port isn't for them. That's what they're not talking about. 5 months on, it is a long pastime for the US, the UK and others to use their substantial weight to ensure that their ally, Israel, immediately reopens land crossings into Gaza, she said on Friday. Absolutely true. Only an immediate and lasting ceasefire will allow us to deliver the massive humanitarian response, before they're all dead, that is required after 5 months of Israel's indiscriminate bombardment, and it's true, and siege of the people of Gaza. This shouldn't anybody, people. It says, since 1967, Israel has exercised full control of Gaza's coastline and territorial waters, blocking ships from reaching the strip. Since 2007, Israel has shut almost all of Gaza's border crossings and its port and has been under Israeli naval blockade, making it the only seaport in the Mediterranean closed to shipping. So they're going to let the US do it. Since Israel launched its war on the enclave, it has allowed only a trickle of aid through the Karam Abu Salam crossing and the Rafah crossing with Egypt. Israeli forces have also targeted Palestinians waiting for food aid. On February the 29th, at least 112 Palestinians were killed and more than 750 wounded when Israeli troops opened fire on hundreds of people waiting for food aid southwest of Gaza City. Go figure, people. Do you need any more proof that it's a genocide? And as the world goes into wars all over energy for the last 100 years, it's never really going to stop. I mean, Australia wants to go renewable, but not really, because the internal combustion engine will be driven out of the country and all the petrol and diesel and anything oil related will be just shunned. And we all know the renewables can't do it. I've been saying that since I've been started the podcast. You can't do it. You can't change into a different energy source without first being able to meet the demands. And to change to renewables means we're not going to meet the demand. So is it on purpose? Well, why do you think Gates was here months ago trying to hawk his TerraPower? What a great name for a nuclear energy. TerraPower, where they want to build nuclear reactors in Australia. That's right, they want to dump the waste here and also build all the reactors. And you're thinking, no, they wouldn't do that. Well, here's a story from February. Okay, this is from abc.net.au. Came out on the 26th of February, 2024. Proposal to build nuclear power plants at former coal sites in the Latrobe Valley draws criticism. Funny that. It says, for the past century, Victoria's Latrobe Valley has drawn its identity from being the home of the state's coal-fired electricity sector. But it's now being touted as the potential home for an Australian nuclear industry by the Federal Coalition. Nuclear power generation has been put forward as a zero emissions solution, despite being banned by the coalition in 1998. It says, while the coalition is yet to release its clean energy policy, federal opposition energy spokesperson Ted O'Brien, never heard of him, has previously suggested that communities which have experienced, hosting coal-fired power stations could be the ideal locations. It's funny that, because every time I see these charging stations for electric cars, I think to myself, and they're on the street, they just stick out like a Bowser on the side of the road, if you can call it a Bowser, with a big electricity connector you plug into the plug in your car, like a big toy, and charge it up for probably half an hour. I always thought, why don't they just put them in petrol stations? Why not convert the petrol station into a charging station, and then the problem solved? But they haven't done that. But they'll build a nuclear reactor on a coal-fired power station site. Anyway, common sense is not common. We know that. But anyway, so it says here, Ted O'Brien's position has drawn criticism from some of Victoria Latrobe Valley, which hosts the state's coal-fired power industry. The community group Voices of the Valley was born a decade ago out of the Hazelwood Mine fire, which burnt for 45 days, shrouding Morwell and its surrounding towns in smoke. Now, that's a big deal. And it says, but imagine if a reactor goes up. It'd be more than smoke. I can tell you, a lot longer than 45 days or whatever it was. For the group's president, Wendy Farmer, it was the beginning of a new chapter advocating for the health of her community. She said the community would not support nuclear power. It's just like, she's saying, let's just make it a dumping ground. It's an industrial area. The people there don't matter anymore, Ms. Farmer said. There would need to be really strong community support for nuclear power, and there isn't. She said, shift to renewables. Ms. Farmer told the ABC the delay in Victoria's transition to renewable energy was contributing to the scepticism about future power generation and the phase out of coal-fired power stations. The issue we have is federal and state arguing against each other and we're not pushing fast enough to get the renewables into the grid, she said. Look at offshore wind. How long we're waiting, people say. We're having a shortage of power because renewables aren't doing their job. No, you're having a shortage of power because you're closing the coal-fired power stations because of the climate hoax. That's why. And they go on to say the Victorian government has announced plans to legislate a renewable energy target of 95% by 2035. And they've got a video with this called Nuclear versus Renewables. So I'm not even going to look at it because they're going to make nuclear win because it can do it. But the effects of nuclear power going wrong is permanent. So this is the risk people take. They want to go lazy and do everything the easy way and they don't want the consequences. Well, if you do nuclear energy with the waste being dumped in, we've got massive consequences. So it says after the Hazelwood mine fire, it says that, there were two inquiries, health studies, the beginning of many community groups and declaration of the Latrobe Health Innovation Zone, which stood to protect the Latrobe Valley from polluting industries. And it says since then a lead smelter has been proposed and now the coalition says former coal mine sites with existing power infrastructure could be ideal hosts for nuclear power stations. Member for Gippsland Darren Chester told the ABC he understood the emotion surrounding nuclear but urge residents to look at nuclear power generation on a global scale and how it was often fueled by uranium mines in Australia. The thing about nuclear energy is it has zero emissions. Yeah, especially when it blows up. It has zero people then, doesn't it? Zero everything, actually. It says it's a convention we need to have as calmly as and rationally as we can make sure we're making the best decision about future generations of Australians having access to reliable and affordable energy. So along comes 5G, along comes the surveillance grid, and along comes nuclear energy to power it. I mean, what more could you want, people? So it says, but while nuclear power may be more reliable, really, than renewable energy dependent on wind and sun, what about coal-fired power stations? What's wrong with them? Oh, the climate hoax, sorry. Bruce Mountain from the Victorian Energy Policy Centre said it was hard to ascertain exactly how much it would cost to build nuclear power stations in Australia. The fact they're even talking about it, people, means they're thinking about it. It says doing a proper likewise comparison of cost is in fact incredibly difficult, Mr. Mountain said. Per kilowatt of power produced, wind and solar are much, much cheaper, but they're variable. So if you have demand that can flex variably and the availability of wind and solar, then that's your cheapest option. Now, that will never happen, people. The federal government says replacing coal with nuclear would cost $387 billion, despite many companies, including superannuation funds, jumping on board to invest in offshore wind farms. Mr. Mountain said around the world the opposite was true for nuclear power generation. Nuclear will not happen in Australia and it is not happening elsewhere in the world without a great amount of public support to underwrite the costs, he said. Private companies are not building nuclear. The operating risk per capita of power production, it costs a lot more than the alternative. So that guy's saying, nah, it's not going to happen because of the cost. Then you move on to this story. This came out, abc.net.au, came out on the 26th of February, 2024. Andrew Forrest slams the fossil fuel industry and the Coalition for Nuclear Energy bulldust. It says mining and renewable energy magnate Andrew Twiggy Forrest has used a National Press Club address to accuse the National Party of betraying the bush by supporting nuclear energy over renewables. The federal coalition made up of the Liberal and National parties are currently planning to take a pro-nuclear energy platform to the next federal election. We need to have a mature conversation about nuclear, Liberal leader Peter Dutton said earlier this month. It's the latest technology that has zero emissions and it can firm up renewables in the system. In a one-on-one interview with the business after his press club address, Andrew Forrest had a message for the coalition. I say to all my friends in the Liberal National Party, no one owns this space. It's the right space. So let's both get after renewable energy, he said, reflecting that Labor currently has the high ground on energy transition. There is no choice here. Green energy is the lowest cost of energy into every Australian household. It's going to happen anyway. Green energy will not destroy the environment. Aha, this is a guy that owns mines, lots of them. In fact, that's why he's rich, because he owns lots of mines. So this is a guy about talking about destroying the environment. It's sort of funny coming from a guy that does destroy the environment, but, you know, wants to wear a different hat now. And it's not the Akubra. So it says fossil fuels will continue to be unreliable, expensive, be used as a weapon, and cost more to every Australian household, so we know what's going to happen. Can we just stop all the bickering and politicking and get on with it? Mr. Forrest backed the recent proposal by economists Ross Garnett and Rod Sims, also revealed in a speech at the National Press Club, to introduce a carbon solutions levy on fossil fuel extraction within Australia and all fossil imports. So they're going to force you to not use fossil fuels, people. That means the cars will be gone. Everything to do with fossil fuel will be gone. All to be left will be Andrew Forrest, Twiggy, and his windmills and his solar panels. And a promise. That's why the nuclear energy is going to win. I don't want it to win. But with opposition like that, it can't fail. So it says, he said the alternative, Twiggy, would be for Australian businesses and consumers to pay their carbon taxes to overseas governments or face losing key export markets. At the end of the day, they always say that, the question for Australians is not if or why to price carbon, it's whether or not we allow the price to be set by Australia, by Australians, to the profit of Australians, or by global markets, he argued in his speech. Now, this is a guy with global interests. Let's look him up and see why he's so pro-Australian. Let's have a real look at this guy. One sec. Anyway, let's start with the rich list. It's not a list of other people, just him. And it just shows you, regardless of what they do, whether it's philanthropic, all those sort, you know, philanthropy, I should say, all that sort of stuff, not philanthropic, all the stuff like donating money and building institutions to stop slavery and all this sort of stuff, despite that, because these people like Bill Gates, all of them, they always throw money towards some sort of cause. Even Jeffrey Epstein, the pedophile, did the same thing. They all throw millions of dollars to a cause and to get them off their backs. This guy's done the same thing. It says in 2011, he was worth $6 billion. That's back then. In 2012, it actually went down to $5.8 billion. And then it went down again in 2013 to $3.6 billion. It must have been all the giving away of the billions of dollars, people, to all these causes. Then in 2014, it jumped back up to $5.86 billion. And then it jumped back down from 2015 to $2.8 billion. So it's a bit of a seesaw, people. Then 2016, $3 billion. 2017, jumped to $6 billion. 2018, $6 billion. 2019, nearly $8 billion, sorry. 2020, we're talking the pandemic. Yes, we are. $23 billion. 2021, $27 billion. 2022, $30 billion. And 2023, $33 billion. Now, isn't that weird? The pandemic, bingo, from $8 billion to $23 billion. Something going on there? Didn't Bill Gates double his wealth during that period as well? Didn't all of them make big bucks during that period? Yeah, okay. So we've looked at that. We now have a big picture. Now let's see what the excuse is as I go back into the Wikipedia backwards, because that's at the end of it, right at the end. And I just thought I'd just look at this guy just to see, because they all do this. They all donate, and they've got, in this case, he's got a daughter that didn't like the slavery she saw in Pakistan. So what did Mr. Forrest do? He donated a coal mine to Pakistan in return for something like 100,000 slaves wouldn't be slaves anymore, even though we know that's not what happens. They go back to being slaves. Why? Because that's the only job they've got. You take the slave job of them, they've got nothing and they die. So this is the problem with the world, is that this Band-Aid approach is not real. Okay, it just makes them feel good and looks good in the press. Anyway, so it says Andrew Forrest is best known as the former CEO and current non-executive chairman of the Fortescue Metals Group and has other interests in mining industry and cattle stations. With an assessed net worth of $33 billion, according to the Financial Review of 2023 Rich List, Forrest was ranked as the second richest Australian. The Financial Review named him the richest person in Australia in 2008. So there you go. In 2013, Andrew and Nicola Forrest, his wife, were the first Australian billionaires to pledge the majority of their wealth to charity. We go, majority? In their lifetimes. He had earlier stepped down as CEO of Fortescue Metals in 2011. Much of the philanthropy. It is philanthropy. Philanthropy has been through either the Mindaroo Foundation, focusing on education and Indigenous Australians, or the Walk Free Foundation, focusing on ending modern slavery, both of which he established. Forrest has been accused of avoiding... Wait for this, people. This is at the end of that sentence. I love this bit. Forrest has been accused of avoiding paying company tax, having revealed in 2011, this is just before he jumped ship, that Fortescue had never paid company tax. Is he a crook, people? Well, I'll let you be the judge of that. Then it goes through the early life. I'm not going through all that. And the education, all that sort of stuff. But see, after he graduated... from his study in education, it said he worked as a stockbroker at the brokerage house, Kirk Securities and Jackson's. And then it says, and this is how it all started, after noticing the demand for stainless steel was rising at 4% a year, he quit stockbroking and got into nickel mining by founding the Anaconda Nickel. So you got Clive Palmer, who also owns nickel mines, a very rich person too. These people got rich through mining. That's what they did. So in the Wikipedia where it says Fortescue Metals, it says one of Forrest's initial mines in the Pilbara produced and shipped $50 billion worth in iron ore without ever providing compensation or receiving permission from the Yindjibarra. It looks like I can't say this Aboriginal word, but it's Yindjibarndi people. That's probably completely wrong. To carry out mining on their land, the operation in the area destroyed about 250 cultural and sacred sites. So, the philanthropy provides to Indigenous people and trying to give them jobs and everything. He must have felt pretty guilty about how he made his fortune in the initial stages. And it says Fortescue made its first iron ore shipment to China in May 2008. So straight away, the guys, he's attached to China and he stomped all over Aboriginal land. Sorry, but that's the reality, and that's how he gets these billions of dollars, people. So whatever he does in between that, that's the reality, okay? So it says here where he tried to get jobs for the Aboriginals. See if I can find that one, because that's also interesting. This is what I mean by not so much the Band-Aid approach, but trying to look like they're doing something, getting something done, but it just fails because it was never really genuine in the first place. Okay, this is very interesting, this part. I didn't know about this, so I'm just reading it now. It's under the title in the Wikipedia of philanthropy, and then it's got Indigenous Australians. And it says, after stepping down as Chief Executive Officer of the Fortescue Metal Group, Forrest noted that he had been spending more than 50% of his time on Indigenous philanthropy. Forrest became an ambassador of the Australian Indigenous Education Foundation, encouraged by philanthropy of the Rockefeller Group, Warren Buffett and Bill and Melinda Gates. Andrew and Nicola Forrest established the Australian Children's Trust in 2001. Through the influence of Scotty Black, Forrest started the Generation One Project with assistance from James Packer, Kerry Stokes. These are all like billionaires who each donated $2 million. Geez, that would have been like 20 cents from them, along with the support of their respective media stations. And then it just goes on to say how great they all are. That's it. But here it says, I'll just read this bit here. In 2013, Forrest was chosen to lead an Australian government review into Indigenous employment and training programs, delivered on the 1st of August 2014 with 27 recommendations. The review proposed the creation of the cashless welfare card. That's the one they tried out in Ceduna in South Australia, the wealthy card, where you could only buy what the government told you could have. So that's how he was helping them, by depriving them of the things that they wanted. This is exactly, this is incredibly bad, because that cashless card is now the one they'll eventually put on us. And this is the danger. Like the universal basic income, what you can buy will only be what they tell you can buy. These are globalists with their minions trying to take over that whole section. And there's another section here where it says, Forrest obtained 253 business signatories to his covenant, right, with Rudd. This is Kevin Rudd, the Prime Minister back in the time. And it says, Forrest planned to employ 50,000 Aboriginal people. As the two-year deadline approached, estimates put the number of Indigenous job placements under the scheme of around 2,800, well short of the original goal. So it's just all, it's all talk. And then it says, Forrest is opposed to welfare dependency. He doesn't want you on the dole for Indigenous Australians. He had recounted stories of young Aboriginal girls in the Pilbara offering men sex for cigarettes, leading to five Indigenous women from the region collectively lodging a complaint with the Human Rights and Equal Opportunity Commission that Forrest's comment, was racist and vilified the community. Forrest has been publicly accused of engaging in questionable methods of land acquisition and has accusations levelled at his company for failing Indigenous trainees at the Fortescue Metal Group's Vocational Training Centre in Port Hedland. So, I mean, end of story. I'm not going to read any more, but you can see you don't get that rich for nothing. You throw a few pennies towards them, the crumbs for the plebs, and you get on with it. So anyway, back to the original story now that we've gone through that one. And back to the Twiggy article. It says, in 2026, he's saying, the EU will impose a carbon border tax on all products. Major export markets of Australia, including Australian products made from using fossil fuel. A tax on the carbon they emit or contain. If we have a carbon price or levy, we won't pay that tax overseas. Wasted, it will stay in Australia. As more and more countries bring carbon border taxes online, more and more doors will close on Australian exports if we don't get moving. No, the carbon pricing thing, the whole thing's a hoax. You don't need to do it at all. This is what is pushing the whole, the global warming hoax. This is what it's all about. Stop coal because they think the Earth's warming up. That's what it's all, this is what the hoax is. So this guy's going along with it. That's what basically all he's doing. And it says here, nuclear energy pushed by fossil fuel sector. This is interesting. Fielding questions from reporters about his press club address, Mr. Forrest said nuclear energy was being used as a Trojan horse by fossil fuel producers to keep oil, gas and coal in the energy mix for longer. That's a load of rubbish. The nuclear energy, they want it. That's what he doesn't get. They do want it. They want to be able to power the 5G and everything else properly. That's the whole point. They do want it, and they want to dump all the waste in Australia. That is also going to happen. They've already agreed on it. There's already a site now picked for high-level nuclear waste to be dumped by countries from all around the world. That's already been picked. And they were fighting that for decades, but now it's done. Okay, so, and he's probably annoyed because it's probably in his backyard, but whatever. That's probably another argument. But the fact is, no, they do want nuclear energy. The problem is they just want to get rid of coal so that we've got no energy support. Of course, he's probably right that they may be using it as a Trojan horse, not to keep our oil and gas going, to just actually kill energy full stop, okay, so that we have less and we're more controllable. That's really what I reckon is going to happen. So it says here, he's saying, the main thing the green electricity and green energy industry needs, and he's saying, ladies and gentlemen, is for the fossil fuel sector to stop lobbying governments to stand in the road. Fortescue's executive chairman responded, if you think that nuclear came out of nowhere, no, it didn't. It's been pushed by the fossil fuel sector as a great way to delay the whole country for 20 years from switching to a cheaper energy. During his prepared press club remarks, and this is a Mr. Destroy the Environment mining person, Mr. Forrest took a none too subtle dig at the sections of the National Party which have been spruiking the benefits of nuclear energy. He says, we ask those who claim to represent the bush now to stop dividing us with the false hope that we can cling to fossil fuels forever. We can't. See, he's a globalist, so please stop betraying the bush. See, he knows renewables won't work, people. That's why he's pushing them. Okay, he knows that if we go fully renewable, everything will collapse. And this is what they want. But if we go nuclear, we may not collapse. But at the same time, it's more dangerous. Basically, they're just trying to sideswipe coal so they've got more power. That's what, literally, excuse the pun, but that's what they want. They want to make sure that all these other see, India and China aren't stopping coal. They're building more coal mining stations. They don't care. It's producing energy for the country. They couldn't care less. But in Australia, we've got like 24 active mines. In China's like 1,500. And India, roughly the same. This is why we look ridiculous when we say we're going to close down the last remaining ones and have no power at all. And that's why the Liberal Party is suggesting nuclear energy, simply because it's an alternative. Everyone knows renewables aren't going to work. So why are we closing the coal-fired power stations down when there's no global warming hoax stuff? Climate hoax, that's the word I was looking for. It's ridiculous. That's what fuels the fire, is that. Nothing more. Otherwise, we'd be the same as we were for the last 100 years, okay? Anyway, this is where the argument is. They've realised now if they can cut our energy, we're done, okay? We're talking the majority of the population, and that's what they're trying to do. And this Twiggy guy is not happy because they're thinking about nuclear, which will actually stop that from happening. It'll give us a little bit more time to get more energy. He doesn't want that. They all know that renewables is going to collapse. He wants China to win. This guy's tied to China with iron ore. He wants them. He already knows they're winning. You know, and the globalists want to use China as a global police. Okay, so that's really the full picture in that respect, in my opinion. And reading on what he's saying, we'll let him have his say. He says, if we swallow this new lie that we should stop the rollout of green energy and that nuclear energy will be our fairy godmother, we will be worse off again. And we'll see. What does he say nuclear energy can't do or can do? I mean, let's see what he says about it. He just says don't use it. Doesn't say why. And it says, he says, I do know how to do projects. I do know the science and I do know the economics. These misinformed, unscientific, uneconomic, plucked out of thin air bulldust of nuclear policies of politicians masquerading as leaders helps no one. Yes, but nuclear is established in Europe and overseas and he knows that. Okay. Well, let me just read on and see what his argument is. He says, it works really well if you give subsidies. As one of Australia's biggest investors in renewable energy and green hydrogen, because that's what he really pushes, over recent years through Squadron Energy and Fortescue Future Industries, Mr. Forrest was asked if he was seeking more subsidies for the industries he had pivoted towards. Well, that's probably part of it as well. While he said he would welcome more subsidies for renewables if they were on offer, Mr. Forrest also pointed out that the fossil fuel sector continued to receive effective subsidies from the Commonwealth government. If the government wants to speed it up even further, yes, it works really well if you give subsidies, he said. The diesel fuel rebate is one massive subsidy that's locked in. Us having to send Australian hard-earned dollars overseas when we could have been making all that energy in Australia with Australian workers. It's a guy that sells iron ore to China, Phil. Anyway, it says, speaking to the business, Mr. Forrest praised the Biden administration's Inflation Reduction Act and while welcoming the Albanese government's $2 billion hydrogen Head Start program, implied that more could be done locally to encourage investment in Australia. So he thinks the nuclear energy companies are all going to be overseas. Well, that's why Bill Gates was here, flogging his own one. Fortescue recently announced a fast-to-market $550 million liquid green hydrogen plant to be built in Arizona in the US. He's going to build one, not even in Australia. He says, I would love to build it here. We have to go first to prove this industry, get it up and going as quickly as possible where the economics are best, he told. So, no, because he's not getting subsidies, he's going to build it in the US. This guy is, he's answering his own questions about what he's like. I'm not going to read the rest. You can see where it's going. It just talks about money and credits and all that. I'll just read this bit here. But he hasn't explained why he hates nuclear energy. He probably thinks it's too costly or something, but he hasn't said it. Forrest slams fossil fuel subsidies lack of tax. This is a guy that didn't pay company tax with Fortescue Metals. During his prepared remarks, Mr. Forrest had already highlighted what he argued was the unequal and unbeneficial relationship between multinational energy giants and Australia. Australia's hardworking teachers, nurses and retail workers pay more income tax and GST than the tax paid by the entire fossil fuel industry. This guy didn't pay tax at all. How could he be even arguing this when he didn't even pay any tax? So, I mean, this is a false, empty argument that he is just angry because he's not being looked at. That's all this is. And he doesn't say anything that I can see about fossil fuels versus nuclear energy. I mean, I'm just reading it again to see if I did miss that because I'm reading over it. But it just says, see if you can find out where the cost thing is. He just says, no, it doesn't. It just says zero emissions, renewables in the system. So I'm just seeing if he says it because I thought I did read something where there was the comparison. There it is. Fossil fuels will continue to be unreliable, expensive, and used as a weapon. So what's going to happen? Can we just, yeah, see, he's not. Didn't say anything. I'm just going through the article again. Why doesn't he mention why he hates nuclear energy? He's saying that he doesn't want it, but I think that it's an empty argument. I think he just wants to push the hydrogen and he's not getting his subsidies, so he's angry. And that's all it is. It's just people lining their own pockets, as they always do, people. Then you've got a final one here from the 2nd of March 2024. Experts call for increased monitoring and reduction of carbon emissions on major infrastructure projects. See, this is going to be an emissions scheme everywhere where they actually start taxing on how much emissions are gauged on the projects or anything you do to do with emissions. There will be a price, a carbon tax, if you will, in a different way, where they're going to look at everything and give you a price tag. Well, if you want to do that, you have to pay this. And they're going to start with the internal combustion engine cars are going to get hit really hard with a bigger tax on them, even for, say, registration. Whatever they call it, they'll give it a name, but it'll be more money to the government because you've been a very bad person by doing something that's been done for 100 years. So it says here, from the cement and steel used in new train stations to the energy spent in building a new hospital and the driving of petrol-fueled cars on big new roads, major infrastructure projects are linked to a lot of carbon emissions. The problem is, across Australia, experts say those emissions are not being consistently measured. This is abc.net.au, 2nd of March 2024. It says, Infrastructure Victoria is calling on the state government to introduce a dollar value per tonne of carbon emissions to inform business cases for new roads, rail projects, schools and hospitals. They're going to make it even more expensive to do what they already do. And guess what that means? Higher tax. That's what it is. It also wants the government to consider building fewer big projects and instead prioritise other no-build solutions like better traffic light management and more surveillance cameras to combat congestion. It says New South Wales currently has a roadmap to decarbonise infrastructure, which includes measuring all government infrastructure and implementing a carbon management system by 2025. That's how soon, people. Next year. But with the construction industry accounting for 18% of global emissions, this is the building part, experts say Australia will need to move faster to reduce emissions from big building works. What is the cost of carbon emissions? Infrastructure Victoria Chief Executive Jonathan Spear said, while most big projects in Victoria do measure carbon emissions, there is no consistent approach across the government departments on how to do it. We can't manage what we don't measure, he said. So there's a really important opportunity for governments to increase the amount of carbon we are embedding and creating when we commit to infrastructure projects. Just gobbledygook, people. It's just going to be another tax. Very simple. To them, so they can just go, oh, look, more money coming in, and there'll be less money going into these businesses because actually there'll be less businesses. That's the end result of that. So it's got Infrastructure Victoria's released a report finding the government's guidance on the value of carbon hasn't been updated since 2013. Are you kidding, people? The report found that the suburban rail loop used a value of $46 per tonne of carbon dioxide equivalent, but the North East Link used a value of $52 per tonne of carbon dioxide equivalent. Infrastructure Victoria recommends adopting an interim carbon value of $123 per tonne, similar to what is in New South Wales. So, and it's got reduce, reuse, recycle. This is the circular economy. That's what they call it. The report urges governments to consider alternatives to big building projects in the first place, like introducing off-peak fares for public transport. That'll be the electrified bus service, to try to spread demand throughout the day, or better managing traffic lights to help ease congestion. No, that'll be the surveillance cameras that they put more into the 5G when they go up in the poles. That's what that'll be. And they've got a graph there. I'm not reading that because I can't, because it's a visual. It says, Mr. Spear said there are many things governments should do before they look to expensive building projects. We can make sure we are making better use of the infrastructure we already have. We can be maintaining it well. We can upgrade it incrementally, and we can change the way we use it so we continue to get the most out of it. It's a gobbledygook, people. For example, a Vic Roads program found that adjusting traffic light cycles along Canterbury Road in the city's east resulted in drivers saving up to 6% on their travel times. Wow, does it save on the carbon emissions? Who knows? But what about need for new roads and buildings? Well, they don't want you to do that, people, because they want less cars, you see. If they can drive the cars off the roof, why do you need to build new roads? Mr. Spear said once government departments had incorporated the cost of emissions into the project business case, it would be unlikely to stop a project going ahead. But he said it would help maintain, it just costs more, a focus on reducing emissions throughout the project. For example, by reducing the amount of cement used in road projects or by using renewable energy to power construction sites. Absolute gobbledygook, people. They're going to be more worried about PFAS in the water supply by then. It says the report points to a school in Warragul North, southeast of Melbourne, which took 8 weeks to build and install using modules that were built off-site, leading to a reduction in the impact to the environment. It's all the global warming hoax, people. That's what's driving all of this, nothing more. Now, I'm just going to not read the rest of the article, but you get the gist of it. They'd like to cancel building projects and just fix what's already there. And I know exactly why they're doing that, because they're not going to have more cars. They're going to end up having less. I'm at the end of the podcast, people. I'll leave it with a little message to you so you can understand how serious this gets once energy is cold, because they won't get nuclear energy on the scale that they'll say. They might bring some in, but they're not going to save us all. That is definitely the case. It says here, and this is abc.net.au, this is when the energy fails. So we've got to watch those blackouts. Get a look at them and find out. Well, not get a look at them, but go to conspiracyhouse.com on the left-hand side of the widget bar. I have the Lords of, I'll see if I can get it up and tell you, the Lords of Power, or the Power Lords, Power Lords of Oz. That's for each state and territory in Australia. When you click on it, you can see all the people that run the energy at this moment in Australia. And the one where I am in Sydney is Ausgrid. So I routinely look at that. And the other day there were 3,000, 3,500 or something like that outages just in the area I was in. And there you go. And then this power just gets turned off and that's it. Nothing works. So in this particular story, and this is quite sad, this story actually, people, but this is what can happen in the real world, not on Netflix. abc.net.au came out on the 1st of March 2024. Telstra apologised to a family in Victoria Telstra apologised to family of Victorian who died during outage at a national 000 call centre, because the phones aren't powered by generators anymore like they used to. So when the power went out, the phones kept going, people. You'd ring 000 and they even knew where you were because of where the landline was connected. Your VoIP landline doesn't work the same way. When the power goes out, you lose the VoIP as well. That's voice over internet protocol. That's what everyone has now. There's no real O2 numbers on the copper network. It's actually just straight to your computer. That's what it is. So when your power goes, that goes. That's the plan anyway. So they got rid of a lot of landlines. I don't think they're all dead, but they're pretty much close to all dead. It says here, reading on, it's got Telstra has apologised for an outage at its national 000 call centre on Friday morning, and to the family of a Victorian who died after their call for help could not be immediately forwarded to paramedics in Melbourne. It says, we suffered a technical incident this morning which resulted in some calls to our 000 service not being able to be transferred to emergency services, Telstra Chief Executive Vicky Brady said. We had been advised that one of these calls involved a person who suffered a cardiac arrest, and suddenly that person subsequently passed away. So what do they say? Oh, sorry. That's it. Oh, here we go. Miss Bradley offered her deepest apology to the family of that person and anyone else who was impacted during the outage. At this stage, we're in a very early stages of the investigation, Miss Brady said. I haven't yet had a chance, and it's not appropriate yet to reach out to that family, but clearly we don't yet understand how much that delay was and how much that impacted. This is just, you see what I'm saying, people? It is unacceptable. She said it is unacceptable if there was any delay in getting that call through. It doesn't matter. Someone died. There's your end result. I'll read no more. Now you can see what's coming, okay? People will die. That's the whole point. And once you give up your entire system to a global network, expect many people to die, not just from not getting through on the phone, other ways. Okay, people, at the end of the podcast for this week, and this is the Conspiracy Oz podcast for Sunday, the 10th of March, 2024. Thanks for listening. Over and out.